Hey everyone, and welcome back to your daily Linux and open source news show. So, today we'll begin talking about Firefox, because Mozilla just announced that Firefox needs more user data to power certain features of the browser. So in Firefox 126, the web browser will now collect some amount of data on what you have searched for. Don't worry, it doesn't look privacy invasive. They will break this data down into categories like health, travel, animals, hobbies, and stuff like that, meaning that they will have a better idea of your interests, and they will use that to fuel certain features like Firefox Suggest, which are the little suggestions that pop up in the address bar when you start typing underneath your history. They're saying that this data is completely anonymized using Oblivious HTTP. That's a tool that reroutes all that data so they can't really link it to your own IP address, and they also don't link it to other search data or to specific users. So if you use a Firefox account, they will not store that in that account. They also say that they don't collect the specific searches that you're typing, so something you're typing in your address bar or the websites that you visit, these aren't stored, they're just storing the broad categories that you've searched for. And you can also disable this data collection by disabling usage data in Firefox's settings, which also seems to mean that it will be turned on by default, which is never really fantastic. Now, all of this, honestly, looks okay to me. I'm not a fan of seeing a browser that I use, and pretty much the last browser I feel that I can safely use without falling into the Chromium monopoly. I'm not a fan of seeing that ramp up the amount of data that it collects. But this feels completely harmless, and it can be disabled. Is it justified in terms of data collection? I'm not sure, because Firefox Suggest is completely useless to me as a feature. I don't think I ever clicked on any of these recommendations. I'm not even sure I ever saw one, really. They probably appear, but I don't even notice them. So collecting more data to power this thing doesn't seem super relevant to me. Maybe they have other features that they would like to implement that require this kind of data as well. But honestly, this move would have been better received if they had talked about these new features at the same time as the announcement that they were grabbing a bit of user data. Now, anyway, as long as it's anonymized, it's not linked to an IP address, and it's just a general category, and you can disable it, I don't really see the harm, although I would prefer if this kind of stuff didn't happen at all. Now, today we also have some news about the new NT-Sync driver for Wine and Proton. This is something that promises to bring a lot of solid performance improvements when gaming on Linux. And this driver should be included in the Linux kernel 6.10, but unfortunately it's been marked as broken, because what has been merged in the kernel is not the entire driver. Not all the patches that are required have been merged, and it is too late now to include them in 6.10, meaning the driver will not be compiled by default in 6.10, and we will have to wait for the next release of the kernel, 6.11, to see how much it helps our gaming experience. Basically, the driver can now create the NT-Sync virtual device that is used to implement the Windows synchronization features that could be used by Wine and Proton. But that's it. The virtual device cannot really be accessed or used yet. The developer for the driver, that's someone working at CodeWeavers, the company that contributes most of Wine's code, this developer said that they're sorry for taking too long to get these patches into an acceptable state, which is nice of them, but ultimately it's not a big problem. You don't have to make excuses, you don't have to apologize. We just have to wait a bit longer. It's still very nice to be building this driver. This will be an interesting new patch to the kernel. The performance improvements compared to base Wine seem absolutely insane, but we will have to see how well they compare with someone using F-Sync or E-Sync already, which does kind of the same thing and is already widely used by people who game on Linux. Now, we also have a weird case of distro knows better than you. The KeePass XC users who use Debian testing, they're in for a rough ride, because the maintainer for that package, for that password manager, arbitrarily decided to cut some features from the application in the default package that they ship. most notably web browser integration, which lets you use the passwords you saved in KeePassXC inside of your browser, which is, you know, the biggest and most interesting use case for a password manager. And when asked why this happened, the developer also published a pretty infuriating message, basically saying that a password manager should not interface with anything and that all these developments are, and I quote, misguided. They also said that users could install the crappy version manually, crappy here meaning the one that is functional. And that is a very entitled and controlling response, because a maintainer's job is to distribute software, not to decide how the software works and what users need or don't need. If the default version of the app comes with these plugins enabled, and most users want them, which seems pretty clear-cut here, it's a password manager, you do want it to be able to interface with your browser. If that's what people want, it's not up to the maintainer to decide if it's misguided or crap. It's their job to give users what they need, or at the very least an easy way to get these features. Especially here, when we're talking about using your passwords in a web browser with a simple extension, instead of having to open the password manager each time, unlock it, search for the password you need, and copy-paste it like a caveman, which will basically add like 15 or 20 seconds for each password entry, and it basically makes things less safe in the end because people will find shortcuts for this. The rationale for the developer is, this is not secure, and this isn't true, it's just a bit less secure, it doesn't mean it's insecure, and second, it's not up to the app's maintainer to decide that. At that point, you could just cut all the services that let apps communicate with each other and or even network access, because that's just increased attack surface as well. And on top of that, this was done without communicating with the KeePass developers at all. This restriction is also apparently against Debian's policy on packaging software. But still, right now on Debian testing, if you use the default version of KeePassXC, you cannot enable integration of the password manager in any browser because the maintainer decided they didn't need it, so no one should have it. You can still install a full version that has all the necessary features for a password manager by using the KeePassXC-full package, but for a lot of users who just were transitioned to this less feature-complete password manager without their knowledge, without their consent, that's pretty sucky. And finally, we also have a potential issue brewing for recent Intel CPUs, notably Xeons. These new CPUs implement support for a new feature called Trust Domain Extensions, which is used to build virtual machines that are isolated and safe from the rest of the system they run on. They run on a specific virtual enclave, and so it makes sure that the VM's integrity can be maintained, as in it's just more secure than running a VM normally. The issue is, to make this secure enclave work, Intel uses signed binaries, which have to be shipped by distributions with a specific certificate. And some distros just do not like or simply cannot ship non-free or non-open source code, one of these distros being Fedora. So they are now seeking an exception to their usual guidelines to be allowed to ship these pre-built signed binaries in Fedora, and this is apparently not very well received because it is basically obfuscated code. Now this thing gets even more confusing because the code for the binaries themselves is open source, but if you just compile them and ship them in the distro's version, this doesn't work because they do need a certificate to be considered valid and for the secure enclave to work, and this certificate is not open source. So this is creating a lot of discussion in the Fedora community. Some seem to consider that it's just like shipping non-free firmware, which Fedora already does, and some are thinking that it's very intrusive because you're now bowing down to a hardware manufacturer who made their decision and is forcing you to comply with it if you want to make sure that you can use a pretty compelling feature that most of your competitors will definitely make use of. And you're also now dependent on Intel to provide updated binaries in case there's a problem or a security breach, and so you're losing a bit of control over the general feature set of your distro. Now, since Xeons are server CPUs, and Linux distros are mostly used on servers, it is probably best to try and support this kind of stuff. Distros who do not support it will require their users to do some extra manual work or just won't let them do it at all, which will push them to maybe use something else. And here, since Fedora is sort of Red Hat's testing version, if Fedora doesn't have that support, it makes things more difficult for Red Hat as well. Now, personally, I see this as equivalent to shipping NVIDIA drivers in your repos. It's the same kind of thing where you give up a bit of control over what you accept and how you update it in exchange for making your users' life easier. In the case of Fedora, they don't have the NVIDIA drivers in their own repos. You need to add RPM Fusion to add them, as far as I remember. And so maybe they want to make the same kind of decision here for those signed binaries. In the end, it won't affect most normal end users because no one runs a Xeon at home, probably, not a lot of people at least. So it's mostly for enterprise users and data centers and stuff like that. But it's still sort of annoying to see manufacturers like implement these features in these sort of ways, because obviously in the open source community, it is going to create some debate. Okay, and this will conclude this lengthy episode of the Daily Linux and Open Source News Show. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. As always, thank you all for supporting the channel, and I guess you'll hear me in the next one tomorrow. Bye!